Melancholia I is the accepted name of a large 1514 German Renaissance engraving of an enigmatic winged angel figure thought by most to be a personification of melancholia, which means black bile in Greek, the humor or body liquid thought by alchemists to be governed by the planet Saturn. With head in hand, staring ahead, as the area is strewn with symbols related to alchemy, geometry, or numerology, such as the hourglass, scales, and compass. Behind the figure is a ladder leading beyond the frame, and a structure with an embedded magic square. This 4x4 magic square of 16 integers has columns, rows, and diagonals that sum to 34. A common emblem of both folk and philosophical magic. Esoteric interpretations of this engraving reveal a deeper meaning linked through the Kabbalah, which I won't cover now, but will leave a link into in the description for those that are interested or have heard of the high angel of Jewish mysticism, Metatron. Albert Pike, quoting from Transcendental Magic, sums up the importance of Kabbalism as a key to Masonic esotericism, saying, quote, "One is filled with admiration on penetrating into the sanctuary of the Kabbalah at seeing a doctrine so logical, so simple, and at the same time so absolute. The necessary union of ideas and signs, the consecration of the most fundamental realities by the primitive characters, the trinity of words, letters, and numbers. A philosophy simple as the alphabet, profound and infinite as the word. Theorems more complete and luminous than those of Pythagoras. A theology summed up by counting on one's fingers. An infinite which can be held in the hollow of an infant's hand. 10 ciphers and 22 letters. A triangle, a square, and a circle. These are all the elements of the Kabbalah. These are the elementary principles of the written word. Reflection of that spoken word that created the world." It was Manly P. Hall who said that, quote, "Few realize the influence exerted by Kabbalism over medieval thought, both Christian and Jewish. It thought that there existed within the sacred writings a hidden doctrine, which was the key to those writings. The theories of Kabbalism are inextricably woven with the tenets of alchemy, Hermeticism, Rosicrucianism, and Freemasonry. The words Kabbalism and Hermeticism are now considered as synonymous terms covering all the arcana and esotericism of antiquity." So, what is this big secret that is allegedly revered by the alchemists, and therefore the Kabbalists, and guarded by their veils of symbolism from the uninitiated masses, and hidden beneath the veneer of modern Abrahamic religions? It can best be understood by unmasking the layers of symbolism concerning the Temple of Solomon, which most people believe is a physical temple in modern Israel, but has esoteric counterparts, which is represented in the fields of astrotheology, namely the celestial temple centered around the sun and the 12 houses of the zodiac, which I won't cover in this presentation. Next, we have the human body, which is also considered a temple. In biblical terms, the Apostle Paul said, quote, "Know ye not that ye are the temple of God, and that the Spirit of God dwelleth in you?" So here we have a person's body as a living temple, but there is yet another, which is an invisible structure, the soul. According to the esoteric teachings, of which Freemasonry is only one custodian, the temple of the human soul is what is being built, and when constructed, the Spirit of God dwells in the holy place thereof. In the Secret Teachings of All Ages, Manly Hall writes, quote, "Solomon, the spirit of universal illumination, mental, spiritual, moral, and physical, is personified in the king of an earthly nation. While a great ruler by that name may have built a temple, he who considers the story solely from its historical angle will never clear away the rubbish that covers the secret vaults. The rubbish is interpolated matter in the form of superficial symbols, allegories, and degrees which have no legitimate part in the original Freemasonic mysteries. According to the ancient rabbins, Solomon was an initiate of the mystery schools, and the temple which he built was actually a house of initiation containing a mass of pagan philosophic and phallic emblems. The pomegranates, the palm-headed columns, the pillars before the door, the Babylonian cherubim, and the arrangements of chambers and draperies all indicate the temple to have been patterned after the sanctuaries of Egypt and Atlantis. Masonry came to northern Africa and Asia Minor from the lost continent of Atlantis, not under its present name, but rather under the general designation sun and fire worship. The ancient mysteries did not cease to exist when Christianity became the world's most powerful religion. Great Pan did not die. Freemasonry is the proof of his survival. The pre-Christian mystery simply assumed the symbolism of the new faith, perpetuating through its emblems and allegories the same truths which had been the property of the wise since the beginning of the world. There is no true explanation, therefore, for Christian symbols save that which is concealed within pagan philosophy. Without the mysterious keys carried by the hierophants of the Egyptian, Brahmin, and Persian cults, the gates of wisdom cannot be opened. Consider with reverent spirit, therefore, the sublime allegory of the temple and its builders, realizing that beneath its literal interpretations lies hidden a royal secret. According to esoteric legends, Solomon understood the mysteries of the Kabbalah. He was also an alchemist and a necromancer, being able to control the demons, and from them and other inhabitants of the invisible world, he secured much of his wisdom. In ancient Greece, demons referred to a divinity, or supernatural being of nature between gods and humans, which was not necessarily evil or malevolent. Concerning the secret teachings veiled by Solomon of the mystery schools, Manly Hall goes on to say, quote, "Though the temples of Thebes and Karnak be now but majestic heaps of broken and time-battered stone, the spirit of Egyptian philosophy still marches triumphant through the centuries. Though the rock-hewn sanctuaries of the ancient Brahmins be now deserted and their carvings crumbled into dust, still the wisdom of the Vedas endures. Though the oracles be silenced and the house of the mysteries be now but rows of ghostly columns, still shines the spiritual glory of Hellas with luster undiminished. Though Zoroaster, Hermes, Pythagoras, Plato, and Aristotle are now but dim memories in a world once rocked by the transcendency of their intellectual genius, still in the mystic temple of Freemasonry, these godmen live again in their words and symbols, and the candidate passing through the initiations feels himself face to face with these illumined hierophants of days long past." Weight suspended from a fixed point so that it can swing freely back and forth, and it also makes for a good metaphor for the tendency of a situation to oscillate between one extreme and another. This is also similar to the way a swing moves back and forth, and when regarded in a historical context, can be compared to the way different time periods have tended to move in a cyclical manner, rather than progressing in a forward, linear march. The pendulum of life often swings until it reaches a tipping point, and then it shifts course and swings back in the other direction. This concept also seems to apply to the way religious organizations have functioned over time, such as with the Catholic Church, which at one time carried a very strict social policy, for example, during the Holy Inquisition, when a group of institutions within the Catholic Church made it its aim to combat religious dissent starting in the 12th century and what it called heresy, which resulted in the genocide of certain groups, such as the Cathars. Cathar comes from the Greek word meaning pure ones, who were a Gnostic sect with followers that called themselves good Christians, but the Catholic Church did not recognize their belief as being Christian, and so they were often burned alive. During the late Middle Ages and early Renaissance, the concept and scope of the Inquisition significantly expanded in response to the Protestant Reformation, which is an example of the religious pendulum swinging away from the authoritative control of the church to a degree of religious freedom, where the Bible was translated and published into other European languages, such as French, English, and German, giving direct biblical access to the common people rather than dependency on the clergy, who were the only ones who could read Latin at the time. I'll include a link in the description to a video I did on the Protestant Reformation for those who are interested. This also resulted in what is called the Counter-Reformation, or Catholic Revival, which was a response to the Protestant Reformation and the period when Europe underwent several decades of religious wars, expulsions, heresy trials, inquisitions, and the founding of new religious movements and orders. Such policies had long-lasting effects in European history, with exiles of Protestants continuing well into the 1700s. A man named Lorenzo Corsini became Pope Clement XII and led the Catholic Church from 1730 until 1740, during which time he banned Catholics from becoming Freemasons, a prohibition which lasted from 1738 until 1983. Where any Catholics who publicly associated with or publicly supported Masonic organizations were excommunicated. Which brings us to the topic of today's episode, regarding a secret organization that came about from this band called the Occultists. The word oculist is basically the same in meaning as an optometrist, and the chosen profession used to disguise a secret order that was no longer permitted by the church, so continued by disguising their activities by publicly proclaiming a different activity. In the same way that alchemists publicly claimed to be trying to convert common metals into gold, but really working on other esoteric transmutations, the Occultists chose the symbol of the eye doctor as a cover for their occult inner workings, which, like other secretive orders, revolved around initiation to become a member. The master wears an amulet with a blue eye in the center. Before him, a candidate kneels in the candlelit room, surrounded by microscopes and surgical implements. The initiation has begun. The master places a piece of paper in front of the candidate and orders him to put on a pair of eyeglasses. "Read," the master commands. The candidate squints, but it's an impossible task. The page is blank. The candidate is told not to panic. There is hope for his vision to improve. The master wipes the candidate's eye with a cloth and orders preparation for the surgery to commence. He selects a pair of tweezers from the table. The other members in attendance raise their candles. The master starts plucking hairs from the candidate's eyebrow. This is a ritualistic procedure. No flesh is cut. But these are symbolic actions out of which none are without meaning. The master assures the candidate. The candidate places his hand on the master's amulet. Try reading again, the master says, replacing the first page with another. This page is filled with handwritten text. Congratulations, brother, the members say. Now you can see. For more than 260 years, the contents of that page and the details of this ritual remained a secret. They were hidden in a coded manuscript, one of thousands produced by secret societies in the 18th and 19th centuries. At the peak of their power, these clandestine organizations, most notably the Freemasons, had hundreds of thousands of adherents, from colonial New York to imperial St. Petersburg. Their lodges were considered by some to be safe houses where free thinkers could explore everything from the laws of physics to the rights of man, to the nature of God, all hidden from the oppressive, authoritarian eyes of the church and state. But like the pendulum effect we discussed earlier, things do not remain static, they change, and organizations also change, ironically in directions often opposite to the very reason they were founded in the first place. Where at one point in time, a secret society held meetings to protect and ensure freedom, at another point in time, those same organizations are infiltrated and subverted, used to eliminate the very liberty they swore to uphold. As for the symbolic sight-restoring ritual, it was actually by accident that brought it to light. It started with a 250-year-old coded manuscript that was recently deciphered by machine translation, which used algorithm software to unlock the mystery.
My name is Kevin Knight. I'm at the Information Sciences Institute at University of Southern California, and my area of research is natural language processing. So the Copial Cipher is a 100-page book and includes 75,000 characters. Several hundred years old, written entirely in cipher. We had no idea what the book said, and no one had deciphered it up to this point. We used some automatic methods to cluster the letters, so we looked at groups of letters that behave similarly. We also have programs that can identify the language behind the text, and it gave a slight preference for German. One thing we noticed was that the Roman letters in the text all seem to have a similar behavior to one another. The first hypothesis that we had was that's the real code. In the end, it turned out that those Roman letters were the spaces between the words. And the first two words that we could see here in the German were ceremony of initiation. So that was very exciting because we had no idea what the book was about until that point. And the next two words were secret section. Only later, after we cracked it, we found out it was a document from a secret society from the 1730s. Secret societies were kind of a craze in the 1730s. So this opens up a window for people who study the history of ideas and the history of secret societies. The book has several parts, and one part describes the rituals that the society uses. But there's also a lot of political things at the end of the document.
Written in German, the manuscript was detailing the initiation ceremony of the Oculus sect, fixated on both the anatomy and symbolism of the eye. They focused on sight as a metaphor for knowledge. Centered in the town of Wolfenbüttel, Germany, on their crest, the oculist featured a cataract needle and three cats, which some surmise were symbolically used because they could see in near darkness. But the cats were also guarding a cage full of mice, watching over them. Their attitude was rather progressive compared to other male-only secret fraternities in that women could be oculists too. Starting on page 27 and continuing for the remaining 78 pages, the cipher detailed the rituals performed by the highest degrees of the Masonic order rites, unknown to ordinary Masons at the time. Nothing was omitted from the description of these top-level rituals, including the veneration of Hiram Abiff, builder of the Great Temple of Jerusalem, whose decomposed body became the alchemical emblem for turning something rotten into something miraculous and golden. The knowledge of the Templars concerning the early esoteric history of Christianity was undoubtedly one of the main reasons for their persecution and final annihilation. During the centuries just prior to the Christian era, the secrets of the ancient mysteries had gradually fallen into the hands of those that the mystery religions consider the profane. to the student of comparative religion, it is evident that these secrets, gathered by a small group of faithful philosophers and mystics, were reclothed in new symbolic garments and thus preserved for several centuries under the name of mystic Christianity. It is generally supposed by occult authors that the Essenes were the custodians of this knowledge and also the initiators and educators of Jesus. If so, Jesus was undoubtedly initiated in the same temple where Pythagoras had studied 6 centuries before. The name Essenes is supposed to be derived from an ancient Syrian word meaning physician, and they're believed to have held as their purpose of existence the healing of the sick in mind, body, and soul. Most authorities trace the Essenes back to either an Egyptian, Oriental, or Aryan origin. Their methods of prayer, meditation, and fasting were not unlike those of holy men of the Far East. This mystery school, like so many others, had 3 degrees, and only a few candidates passed successfully through all. One of their chief objects was the reinterpretation of the Mosaic Law according to certain secret spiritual keys preserved by them from the time of the founding of their order. It would thus follow that the Essenes were Kabbalists, and like several other contemporary sects flourishing in Syria, were awaiting the advent of the Messiah promised in early biblical writings, which the Bible maintains would last for 1,000 years. It is through this lens that one should consider the Templar Society, a Christian sect in Germany responsible for settling Palestine 1 century before the formation of the modern state of Israel, which they believed would help expedite the Messianic Age. They named themselves after Solomon's Temple and were supporters of the Nationalist Socialist Party in Germany, which tried very hard to separate itself from the secret societies such as the Freemasons and the demographic known as Jews, yet internalized the same ancient Kabbalistic secrets that were banned in Germany during the Nationalist Socialist regime, while its own infamous chancellor publicly called for a 1,000-year Reich, a term right out of Kabbalistic messianic millennialism, while physically populating the modern state of Israel during what is historically known as the Transfer Agreement between 1933 and 1939, a political partnership denied or omitted by post-World War II media and academia, but well understood in the modern lodges and New Age esoteric communities that continue to promote a political agenda rather than historic reality. My name is Robert Sepper. I'm an anthropologist. My published work is available on Amazon as well as through various other major book outlets. They make a great gift. If you'd like to support my work, you could do that through patreon.com. There should be a link in the description section for those that are interested. I appreciate it. Thank you. Please hit the like button and subscribe for future updates. As always, I look forward to reading your comments, so please leave me your thoughts below. Please have a wonderful weekend, and I hope to see you again soon.